Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
There's nothing I love more, and there's nothing that generates conversation better during the offseason than a good list, and that, by the way, remains true even during a time in which Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, feels very different than it normally does. We are in a makeshift studio in my home. For the most part, you don't care about that. You just want the content. But just know that as I look around and do this show today, what I am looking at is not at all like what I'm used to seeing. Hopefully it doesn't impact what you hear too much. What I do think is fun, though, is that in a time in which you're looking for distraction, in a time in which the issues of real life are kind of a lot to deal with, there's really nothing that provides a distraction better than sports. And even when there are no games being played, that can still be true. Because let's face it, one of the best parts of sports, whether it be after a game or before a game or even during a game, are the arguments that sports can generate. And as I said before, lists can be a way of starting those arguments. So let's do that right now. Our buddy Ralph Russo, who covers college football for the Associated Press, has had a list here over the course of the last 24 hours of the top 25 coaches in college football. Now, the list is very interesting for a lot of reasons. And one of the things that kind of generated some comments online was the fact that he excluded coaches in their first or second years on the job, which means Ryan Day from Ohio State's not on the list at all. Now, this is not a Buckeye show, although we will have to talk about Ohio State a bit later on. But from the standpoint of Day's omission, that's not interesting for us. What I do think is interesting for us is that Kirby Smart's probably not as high on this list as I think most Georgia fans probably assume that he should be, probably argue that he, should be overall. Smart is just sixth on the list, ahead of Oklahoma's Lincoln Riley, but behind, James Franklin from Penn State at five, Ed Orgeron from LSU at number four, Brian Kelly from Notre Dame at three, Dabo Swinney at two, Nick Saban at one. Now, I got no beef, and I assume you don't either, with Nick Saban. At this point in time, Kirby Smart has not overtaken Saban. He might. I've predicted here in our program that it'll beat him twice this year. If that be the case, then ranking Saban ahead of Smart, not as easy an argument to make anymore. But for now, it's an argument that makes some sense. Same thing for Dabo Swinney. We haven't seen Dabo and Kirby head-to-head as of yet, but you can't deny what Swinney's been doing at Clemson alongside Kirby Smart's years at Georgia dating back to 2016. Ed Orgeron at fourth on this list. Orgeron's beaten Kirby in each of the last 2 years, and he's the reigning national champion. You've really got no argument there when it comes to Orgeron being ahead of Smart. But where do you get Brian Kelly from if you're Ralph Russo? How do you get him at number three on this list? I'm hopeful that this is just some sort of token gesture in honor of the fact that it's St. Patrick's Day. I'm hoping that's what it's about when it comes to Notre Dame, because on the basis of merit, Kelly over Smart doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, after all, if memory serves, Smart has beaten Kelly on the field in two of the last 3 years. From that standpoint, ranking him ahead, it seems difficult to do. However, if we stipulate, though, that Smart is probably underrated by guys like Ralph Russo and the Associated Press's college football writer as a pretty good stand-in for all of the national media, I think there's some key takeaways here. First of all, I've been watching that Saturday Down South, not Saturday Down South, that's a website, Saturdays in the South, that Saturdays in the South documentary series they've been replaying on the SEC Network. It's really fascinating. And one of the things that you see as a theme in a lot of the earlier episodes of that, I'm talking about college football back during the Wally Butts era or back during the, older coaches era, is a hesitation on the part of media outside of the South to truly embrace the South. There was, Jim Murray, the LA Times columnist, mocking Alabama for not, playing enough games outside the South, and just kind of a general disregard. That was a real theme of the way the media, back then it was a lot of newspaper columnists, the way that it treated the Southern college football, the SEC, when it first started to emerge. And when you see, guys outside the South like James Franklin honored for very little in the way of accomplishment, Brian Kelly honored with very little in the way of accomplishment, it kind of makes you think of, the national media looking to give credit to those outside the South because most of the true ranking national media members themselves are also outside the South. I think it goes to show you that some of what college football dealt with when it first got going big in this region a century or so ago is still kind of a thing even now, maybe. But beyond that, Kirby Smart, if he's underrated, I would say that his accomplishments thus far should maybe rank him a little higher than sixth best on the list of college football coaches. It is probably fair to say that Smart has done something to contribute to the caricature that gets drawn of him. And we all know what it is. Smart's a guy who's a great recruiter. He may be the best recruiter, but can he coach them up once they get to Athens? For good or for the bad, that is the caricature that exists of Kirby Smart. And I think that Smart, with some of his words in the past, has kind of maybe played into that stereotype or that very simplistic drawing of what his personality is. Let me give you a couple of examples of this. Going back to something that Smart said a couple of years ago about him as a coach, he was pretty quick to say at that time that he thought coaching was overrated. Here's Smart from the past.
I learned a long time ago, when you take a job, you need to have proximity to players and you need to be able to have better players, because the coaching part can be overrated.
So Smart there says almost exactly what people would expect to hear from him when it comes to something in the lines of coaching. Hey, Kirby, how good of a coach are you? And his response is, listen, the coaching part's overrated. What you do with the players is less important than the players that you get. Now, those of us that follow college football really closely, I think ultimately we have an idea that's probably true, right? We know that there's a strong correlation between recruiting success and championships. The teams that win championships are the teams that recruit well. So Smart's not wrong, but when Smart's asked a question about his on-field coaching ability and he pivots towards talent acquisition and recruiting, well, that just kind of, I think, furthers the caricature that Smart's more of a recruiter than an on-field coach. And the clip that I just played for you is not the only example of that, of Smart kind of talking about the talent that you possess being more important than the coaching acumen that you possess. Let's go back before the start of the 2018 season, after Georgia had taken a monumental leap from 16-17 in terms of its on-field results. At the time, you know, Kirby also kind of talked about, well, when you look at the growth that we saw in our program that year, Kirby kind of also pivoted back to the talent that Georgia was able to hold on to from 2017. Chubb and Michelle didn't leave to go to the NFL, for instance, and some of the recruiting guys that contributed that year too. Freshman starter Andrew Thomas, for instance. Freshman starter Jake Fromm, for instance. Kirby kind of also touched on talent even when discussing that. Here's an example also before the start of the 2018 season.
I think you always want to get better as a coach. So what we try to do is look at areas we were deficient in last year. Where did we not play well? What did we not do well? A lot of our turnaround had to do with players back for a second year. I mean, let's be honest, a lot of our success had to do with the fact that we had good players decide to come back. Now we're trying to replace those good players with players that were here or were recently signed. But as coaches, we're always trying to look introspective at what we could do better. 2-minute situations, third down and short. You know, we weren't as good on third down as we thought we needed to be. Turnovers, you know, like, how can we improve ourselves? And you're always trying to do that, regardless of what year you're coaching, second, third, fourth, 20th.
So I think that's really interesting. Kirby says, hey, we're trying to improve as coaches, but ultimately the success in 2017 was about the players that we held on to, the players that we recruited. That was a big part of that success formula, which is probably true, and it's certainly generous for Kirby to give credit to someone else other than himself. But when you say things like that, eventually it allows the national media to kind of portray you as a recruiter first and a coach second. And ultimately, you know, if that's the way that the media thinks of Smart, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't upend his chances at success. I think the recruits, the players themselves, know how much development they've gotten while being at Georgia. I think the NFL draft has been a testament to that. I think it's going to be an even further testament to that in future years. But just for the sake of this conversation, in terms of kind of picking an argument with someone as a way of kind of biding the time while we're all stuck at home, let me give you a different take on the transformation that occurred at Georgia from 2016 to 2017. Kirby Smart graciously says, hey, we held on to some good players. They could have left and didn't. We brought in some good players. The 2017 class was, after all, rated number 3 in the country for that year. And according to the 24/7 Sports composite team ranking, it exceeded 300 points, which is kind of a magic number for a truly elite class. So Kirby gives credit to the talent. But that's not the only reason that Georgia went from, what, 8-5 in 2016 to college football playoff and SEC champion in 2017. There were plenty of people watching from afar on that who also gave credit to Smart as a coach. I'll give you an example here. There's a guy named Mitch Light who you've heard over the years make frequent appearances on Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And going back to a couple of years ago in discussing what happened for Georgia in 2017, Light, according to some anonymous coaches that he'd spoken to, coaches that don't go on the record because they want the freedom to speak openly about the subject matter, listen to the credit they gave Kirby, or a coach gave Kirby, in terms of what happened in 2017. All about the talent? At least not according to one coach who seemingly would know. Here is Mitch Light, formerly of Athlon Sports.
You know, we do those anonymous scouting reports in our magazine. We talk to assistant coaches around the league. And here's something that stood out about Georgia. This is another SEC coach. I don't know that I've ever seen a team make the strides from year one, from one year to the next, that Georgia made last year, and I don't think that was a fluke by any stretch. So that about sums it up right there.
So making big strides, getting to a level of improvement, not just about talent. According to an anonymous coach who spoke to Athlon Sports, and Athlon you may be familiar with, does the big preseason magazine before the start of every season. We like to have their guys on to talk about that kind of stuff. And this is from a couple of years ago. An anonymous coach giving Kirby credit for the transformation that took place, not just about talent, but also about coaching. However, beyond all of this, let me kind of try to bring this home this way. Ultimately, the measurement of how good Kirby Smart is as a coach may actually show up in a somewhat unusual way, because we all want to make this like really linear or really specific of, well, players come in, they get better, and they go on to have NFL success, or they win games while they're in the program, and that's a proof either positively or negatively about how good of a coach anybody is or isn't. In this case, we're talking about Kirby Smart. However, I think there's an interesting facet of Smart that I think he judges himself as a coach on something that goes beyond just measurable things like how many games you win or how many players you send to the NFL. If Smart were sitting here in this very weird makeshift studio that I've crafted for myself, I think he would say that those things are important. But I think he would also say, judge me as a coach about something that's a little bit more difficult to measure. Judge me as a coach about something that's a little more intangible. Judge me on my leadership by the leadership that I also cultivate in the players that play in my program. And from that standpoint, I think it's really fascinating from Smart. I want to play you one more clip on this topic of kind of what he said he thinks the job of a coach ultimately is. Winning games, of course. Developing players, getting the most out of talent, of course. But listen to how important Smart says the idea of also cultivating leadership is for the players that you're in charge of. Here's Kirby again from, I guess, probably about 2 years ago. Here's Kirby again.
Hopefully we bring it out, because we've tried to make that very important, that the leadership from within has much more value than the leadership from above. And I think they've bought into that. A lot of the guys aren't afraid to do that. And it's easy to do when you do things right yourself. You know, guys that don't practice hard or don't do the things exactly the right way, it's much tougher on them to confront and demand.
So listen, I think that's when it comes to being an impactful, difference-making coach, that's the kind of attitude you want your guy to have. Working to make guys better leaders, working to make guys push themselves, be the best they can be during practice. And I think when it comes to Georgia and its coach and Kirby Smart, ranked sixth by one national writer, we might argue and say he deserves to be higher on the list than that. One way or another, I think Dog fans, even in the midst of a football hiatus, can feel very confident knowing their program's in very good hands with the coach they have. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is a very different edition of Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are on video still, although the video show is, for the most part, going to be different than the podcast for the next couple of weeks. So for those of you that normally watch on video or listen to the podcast, we appreciate that. It's our plan to keep delivering this to you each and every day. This sounds a little bit more like the Dog Nation Daily you've been used to. The video is going to look just a little bit different because I'm doing it from my home. But we're going to try to make it all possible, continue to do it every single day. That's our goal for you. And we take the job seriously of entertaining you during this time. So thanks for being here for us. We're going to do everything we can to continue to be here for you. And I think today things are going really well. So we'll keep this up for the next couple of weeks that we do our part for social distancing. And of course, Engineered Solutions Georgia make it all possible. Whether you're dealing with a cracked foundation, a waterproofing issue, you know, when you're home longer, you notice more of that. The rain that we've had lately also causes you to notice some of that kind of stuff as well. Well, the good news about Engineered Solutions of Georgia, they are the ones to trust if you're dealing with something along those lines. And the number to get in touch with them is very easy to remember. Simply dial 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW. That'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They have two full-time engineers on staff, so if you've got a substantial problem, they can help you fix that. If it's a smaller thing, well, they can maybe even tell you over the phone about how to solve that problem. Because the good news is sometimes foundation waterproofing stuff is not hard to fix. It just requires a solution. Engineered Solutions of Georgia is a solutions-based company. But if it is a bigger deal, well, you want smart people doing that work for you. Engineered Solutions of Georgia provides that. Two full-time engineers on staff. So if you've got a crack in your foundation, if you've got a wet spot that showed up in your basement or your garage or something along those lines, contact my friends at ESOG. You can reach out to Engineered Solutions of Georgia by dialing 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, we're going to get ready to talk to Jeff Sintel. There was some recruiting news in that Evan Pryor, a 2021 running back that at least was on the list for a lot of Georgia fans, has made his pledge. He's going to Ohio State. What does that mean for the Dogs? We get into that and a lot more with Jeff Sintel right now. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So a very different version of Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today, but a familiar voice on the other side of the phone. It's Dog Nation's recruiting insider, Jeff Sintel. And Jeff, you and I have talked in this space a million times, it would seem, but this is probably the strangest of these conversations. Both of us on phones, both of us at our own home, as we're all, I guess, trying to do our part to create the social distance necessary to stop the spread of the coronavirus. So I guess from a long way away here, I'll say hello to you. But as always, thanks so much for joining us.
So, Brandon, people want to know, man, they're watching you on video. How's it feel in the new spot right here?
You know, it feels pretty good. You know, everybody's kind of pitching in. I mean, honestly, you and I think, are probably really similar to a lot of the people who are listening to us right now. And today, it literally is just folks listening to us. In that, you know, one of the big challenges, and in the grand scheme of things, this is not one of the most significant challenges compared to what some other people are probably going to deal with. But one of the challenges that we face is, you know, I got young kids. Your kids are a little older than mine, but they're still, you know, kind of in a younger stage of life. When the whole work from home thing gets started, you know, most of the work is just sort of keeping your kids happy for a long period of time and helping them stay engaged with their schoolwork and things like that. So I think you and I are probably of an age very similar to a lot of the people who are listening to us right now, that as we all go through this and as we all try to do our part, one of the most difficult challenges is, you know, how do you keep kids pacified long enough to, you know, get some actual work done? I think that's a very legitimate question that a lot of people who are listening to us are dealing with right now.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember when my kids were significantly younger, like maybe 4 or 5 years younger apiece, when I started doing things like this from home, and they just try to creep their way into the broadcast or creep their way into the conversation. Yeah. So I think your two, Charlie and Kate, might be making maybe a weekly appearance with Dog Nation Daily just by saying, "Hey, Dad, have a good show. Tell everybody I said hi."
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they already kind of have that idea in mind. I guess they're both, you know, maybe they have aspirations of following their daddy's footsteps here, but they're both trying to figure out, you know, like when their segment's going to be and what they've got planned. So I've kind of told them that we got to go on as business as usual here for a little while. There's still people who depend on this for entertainment and distraction and things like that. You know, this is not necessarily the big break you think it is. Like, you're not going to be the co-host. So we've had to have that conversation just a bit.
It's funny, the thoughts I have on this matter, Brandon, and I'm sure we'll get to the business of the day today, but my kids have digital learning. They're self-starters. They're used to being on their phones. I have to remind them to do things like get their PE work in. But the one thing my wife and I feel like we're at least trying to successfully navigate is we're trying to teach them a new skill every day. Like, the teaching also needs to come from mom and dad and not just what their teachers give them via email. And yesterday, I guess we should have done it today on Taco Tuesday, but yesterday my kids were taught how to make tacos. So that's nice. One thing per day.
Well, that's pretty good. Well, speaking of one thing per day, it certainly seems like it's been one thing per day the last few days for Ohio State, and in a roundabout way, this is relevant to Georgia. It just seems like the Buckeyes have been very active in the news cycle lately, Jeff. There was the rumor, it's not a rumor that Trey Sermon's transferring. He's leaving Oklahoma, and I guess the rumor is he may land at Ohio State. And then yesterday, Evan Pryor, a running back that was never necessarily deeply connected to Georgia, but when you and I have talked recruiting, Pryor's a name that has come up. He committed to Ohio State. So I guess let me approach the Georgia part of this in two ways. Is this Ohio State intentionally trying to take advantage of what is a significant lull in the news cycle? Is it just a coincidence that we're hearing about them so much here? You know, for the most part, there is a pause button pushed on recruiting across the board right now because people can't even leave their home. But Ohio State is just as active and busy as ever. What's going on there?
So, Brandon, let me see. I didn't mean for this to kind of perfectly assimilate into our daily lives right now, but I think Ohio State is doing two things. One, they're trying to be a little bit like Clemson, and that's the guy that's the program that grabs the early elite commitment, and everybody shuts everything down, and everything's kumbaya and happy. But I think with some positions, there is I've got to get to Costco last Wednesday or the warehouse club, shopping club last Wednesday and stock up on toilet paper. I think that's what Ohio State is doing a little bit when it comes to running backs in certain positions, because they didn't hoard it running back for the last couple of years. And there's a deficit of elite playmakers now with J.K. Dobbins gone at the running back spot. They missed on a lot of their top targets last year. They missed on Bijan Robinson. They missed on Kendall Milton. They kept missing on guys. So you combine that, Brandon, with where they were at in January, where they didn't do a lot of these junior visits, junior days in January, and they kind of thought they'd catch up in March and April when their prospects would see them and they would see their prospects. But right now, especially with the efforts of Ryan Day for certain position groups, Ohio State has just been, let's get our guys, let's get an elite guy, let's get it early, and let's get it done. So they're not left looking and wondering and waiting where all the other elite running backs are going away from the horseshoe.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things here about Georgia that I want to get to, including what Georgia's, you know, priority is going to be for the 2021 running back position, because as I've told you, I think that's a big need for UGA, at least potentially a huge need. But let me say one more thing before we get there. You know, there's a lot of talk around Georgia this offseason, and now, you know, the notion of even having spring practice, you know, would seem to be greatly up in the air, if not completely, you know, absent now. But before that, when we're talking about Todd Monken and his impact on the Georgia offense, there's been a lot of discussion about a gravitating more towards throwing the ball and throwing the wind is a phrase that Monken has used. But with the emphasis that we see Ohio State putting on running backs right now, it is a reminder that the running game is still going to be a big part of college football. No matter how successful Joe Burrow was for LSU a year ago, and no matter how much Alabama may have transferred or transformed itself with Tua Tagovailoa, you know, Ohio State's recruited wide receivers probably better than anyone, maybe ever. I mean, they've amassed an incredible level of talent receiver, and obviously Justin Fields year a season ago speaks for itself. And yet the efforts that Ohio State's gone to restock for 2021 and potentially bring in a transfer for 2020, it is a reminder, maybe one that also serves Georgia fans well, that in this race to upgrade passing attacks, and all the elite teams are trying to do that, that's not necessarily at the expense of running the football, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, I think the difference with Georgia is what Georgia tries to do is they try to spread the load amongst a couple of backs so those guys don't get mashed up and bruised and battered up for their NFL careers. But you look at the highlight backs for both of those programs that are in the finals, that are in the playoffs, that are winning big games, that are considered elite and innovative on offense. Well, Brandon, they still have a bell cow back that has produced better than any Georgia running back over the last couple of years. I mean, you look at last year, J.K. Dobbins, for everything that Fields did, and people can cite, well, that's the Big Ten, Jeff. That's not the SEC. But, you know, Dobbins still had a sporty 6.7 yards per carry average. I know he went over 2,000 yards. I know he had more than 20 touchdowns. That was a lot better than DeAndre Swift's best season by some significant measure. by some significant measure in Athens. And then you look at, you know, Travis Etienne, and I mean, he had a 19 touchdown season a year ago, over 7 yards per carry in that SEC, 1600 yards. I mean, those programs throw it around more, and they're seen as throwing it around more with elite receivers, and yet their one bell cow signature back has produced as well as any Georgia running back has in the Kirby Smart era.
So you've written about Trevion Henderson at DogNation.com, and obviously a lot of us saw that last week as well, at least a portion of that conversation on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger. So I guess let's use this as a transition point of, you know, I told you that the one 2021 storyline that's already been pretty prominent for me is what is going to happen at running back. And the reasons for this are obvious. You know, there are guys that could leave the program after this year. There are guys that could try their hand at the NFL. Not everyone who can does, but a lot of guys like the notion of going to the pros while they still have, you know, a lot of tread left on the tire. So, you know, I think running back is a position we're going to be talking about a lot for Georgia. So with Pryor now off the board, Henderson saying some nice things about UGA, can you just give me a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of what that board looks like for the Dogs right now?
Yeah, so I think the board starts with Trevion Henderson. 53 all-purpose touchdowns last year as a junior. I mean, Brandon, he went through a whole 15-minute highlight tape. I put that, you know, charted every play for DogNation.com. He went through a whole 15 minutes and 30-second highlight tape without getting tackled from his junior year. That's how many touchdowns he had on there. So that guy, I would say, is the number one bell cow target for Georgia in this cycle. There's Donovan Edwards as well. That young man is out of Michigan. You hear a lot of Ohio State. You hear a lot of Notre Dame. You hear a lot of Michigan with that young man. Donovan Edwards is another guy. He visited along with Pryor to Georgia back in January. Those are the two names that kind of stand really, really out now. It seems like there's Georgia, and I think that the pace and the worry and the anxiety, I guess, about elite running back recruiting for Georgia in this cycle is there's about six names that everybody wants. You can throw Kamar Wheaton out of there in Texas. You can throw L.J. Johnson in there. You can throw Will Shipley in there. Evan Pryor's in that name. You got Edwards. You got Trevion Henderson. Those are the guys everybody wants. That's the top of the shelf for a lot of schools. But everybody, the Oklahomas, the Texas, the Ohio States, the Clemson, you know, those schools are all trying to get married up with their elite backs. Some are trying to get two elite backs. I think that's the process where everybody's working through. And for some reason, it leaves some elite backs that are just off that top tier. Guys like Lavoisier Carroll, guys like Cody Brown, two guys out of the state of Georgia, where everybody wants to see what those guys do first before they really, you know, focus in on, you know, going down their board a little bit. And I think those are the next steps. I think, you know, Trevion Henderson told me he'd like to get his decision done in the next couple of months. He told me about a week and a half ago that he had his top schools already. He was just needing to figure out when to drop them. He dropped them yesterday on the heels of the Evan Pryor news. He's got a top nine, but to me it sounds like Trevion Henderson really has a top three or four or five. He does like Georgia a lot. He does plan on giving Georgia another unofficial visit. He has four official visits already mapped out. So Trevion Henderson, when we start thinking about him and really dialing him in, that would be the lightning back that Georgia looks for every cycle. I think Georgia feels like it's pretty good right now with Kendall Milton, also pretty good with Kenny McIntosh, as some of those big thunder between the tackles type backs. And then that would give Georgia a little bit of freedom and flexibility to not think that they have to find another thunder, or they might go toward two lightning backs or more of a combination hybrid with 2021.
So in the Sam Pittman era, we kind of think about he and Del McGee as almost like the best buddy cop movie you've ever seen. You know, running back recruiting, offensive line recruiting, those two things seem to feed off each other a bit. In the early stages of the Matt Luke era, how much of a sense do you get that's going to continue where, you know, for guys like Henderson or the running backs that you might have mentioned, their consideration of Georgia is going to be coupled with Marius Mims and Micah Morris and, you know, Terrence Ferguson, these other offensive linemen. We talk about how connected are those two storylines going to be with Luke now in place of Pittman?
Yeah, so that's very interesting. I think if you had to think about which two positions are kind of married up or going to have the handshake that are going to work the best toward propelling Georgia to an elite class, I think once Georgia gets its running backs figured out, they'll probably be two of those guys in 2021, and they get their offensive line position squared away. That'll be another three or four elite names in 2021. Once Georgia gets those guys figured out, and they already know who they want by and large, especially on the offensive line spot. But I will counsel folks about this. You know, Pittman was amazing. Pittman was, I think, I've even said this on your program, I think he had about a 600 batting average about the guys he really wanted and came in with both barrels about bringing those elite offensive linemen into the program. Now, I hear a lot of amazing things about Matt Luke as well, especially his on-field acumen as a coach. Like Sam Pittman was a little bit more hands-off, not so much hands-on, in-your-face, inspiring, galvanizing of a position coach per se. And I think Matt Luke's personality is going to mesh really well with Kirby Smart, Scott Cochran, and others like that, where I think Georgia, with the way they recruit the offensive line board, is still going to look very good. And I remember talking to a noted coach around the state that he bullseyed this, Brandon. He made it clear to me in no uncertain terms that he felt that Georgia, at least coaching the offensive line position and in-game coaching and just expertise as an overall ball coach, they feel Georgia upgraded there with Matt Luke over Sam Pittman.
Boy, that's great to hear. And a lot of excitement about the start of the Luke era. I think that Pittman was a good one. I think that Kirby Smart did very, very well to replace him as seemingly successfully as he was able to. Jeff, I know this is kind of a strange time, and yet your work at Dog Nation is not going to slow down. You got a lot of good things coming up at the site, and at least a version of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger on Wednesday. So as we get ready to say goodbye to you, would you mind giving us a little bit of a preview of what you still have coming up?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. I consider myself in this business, if you're a good reporter and you really value what you do and the information you have to choose from, you have about, at any given time, about six or seven storylines or chestnuts stored up for the winter, so to speak, where you can continue to provide a daily bread, let's say, as a reporter to your audience and to the folks that pay attention to what you cover on your beat. So, you know, to me, I'm going to write about Tony Grimes on the site. That's the number one target for me on for our Before the Hedges programs for Dog Nation on the 2021 list right now. Tony Grimes has been that way for the last 3 or 4 weeks, I believe. I'm going to write about him and how this has kind of affected his recruiting process, this shutdown and this pause button on the 24/7 sports recruiting cycle, or the 24/7 recruiting cycle. And I think that's something that I think I want you, everybody out there, to get a chance to read. I want to profile a 2022 prospect, CJ Washington, that I've been wanting to write about for some time. And I also put on the forum this morning, Brandon, a name of a 2022 quarterback that I've started to elevate right up there in that Gunnar Stockton category for a 2022 quarterback to watch, that if he did so choose Georgia, the Bulldogs and Dog Nation would be quite pleased.
Fun to think about all of that, Jeff. Jeff, really good stuff. And as you said, the forum at forum.dognation.com, also a great place to go to stay connected with other UGA fans. I can't keep from just getting bored out of your mind. Thanks so much for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today. We will look forward, Jeff, to getting a chance to chat with you soon.
All right, guys, one more reminder. Before the Hedges, it's on SoundCloud, it's on Spotify, and now it's also on your iTunes platform. Maybe we'll catch up with that big bad warship Dog Nation Daily subscription one day.
Well, it's already my favorite podcast, I can promise you that.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Fruit.
All right, really good stuff from Jeff Sintel. I know it's a little different in terms of the recording, just given the fact that I'm recording that at home from right now. I do get all of that. We're going to keep working to make that as much like normal as we're kind of used to being, but we appreciate you being here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. It's fun to be able to have that with Jeff Sintel, and we're going to have interviews for each and every day while we're broadcasting, trying to span the social distance here and do the show in a little bit of an unusual fashion, but try to do the show nonetheless. So as we transition here to our SEC through and kind of talk about what's happening around the SEC, I do want to focus in for a little bit more on the Ralph Russo list of the top 25 coaches in college football, because beyond just what we said about Kirby off the top of the program, I do think there are a couple of interesting things to say about the other coaches ranked among the SEC here. First of all, Nick Saban at number one on this, Dabo Swinney at number two. if you were really starting a program today, you taking Saban over Sweeney? I mean, take Kirby out of it. Take, you know, your affinity, I'm assuming, for Georgia football out of this. Are you really taking Saban over Sweeney? And, you know, you may say, well, that's an unfair question because now you're projecting the future. Well, we're talking about a single year. Okay, well, then change it around then. If you're coaching this year, 2020, you could have a coach. You want Dabo, you want Nick Saban. I'm not really quite sure what the argument for Saban over Dabo is at this point in time. I think that Dabo Swinney has clearly overtaken him. I didn't used to feel that way, but there have been enough head-to-head wins now, enough continual success for Clemson now where, you know, I feel like that any kind of argument in favor of Nick Saban is essentially a history lesson more so than a current-day, present-moment conversation. In fact, I saw where one of the former Alabama players was doing kind of a AMA, Ask Me Anything, and he was asked, hey, who do you want the next coach at Alabama to be? And this was just within like the last 24 hours or so. And he said, I want it to be Dabo Swinney. And a lot of Alabama fans have sort of felt that way, that, you know, Dabo, because he's an Alabama grad, played at Alabama, that'll be the heir apparent to Nick Saban. But at this point in time, why would Dabo leave Clemson to go to Alabama? What can Dabo do at Alabama that he's not already doing at Clemson and, frankly, having more fun doing it? So, you know, we are no longer in the Nick Saban era. Saban's still coaching, and Saban may win the national championship this year. But this era doesn't belong to him anymore. He got shoved off the stage last year by Ed Orgeron. He has been nudged off the stage a couple of times by Dabo Swinney. Saban is still a contemporary coach, but his era, the one defined by him, is for the most part in the past. And, you know, Kirby Smart's going to have a chance this year to put the final nail in that with some head-to-head wins. And at that point in time, the final claim to fame that Saban kind of enjoys, having never lost one of his former assistants, that could go away if Kirby gets the win. But for the most part, the era that we're currently in, it belongs to guys like Dabo. It belongs to guys like Orgeron. Doesn't mean that Alabama's not still a contender, but in terms of dictating the pace of the rest of the sport, that's just not really what Saban's role is anymore. So Ed Orgeron comes in at number four on this list. You know, of all the, I guess, tunes that I've changed in terms of things you may have heard me say in the past in the show that's just way, way different now, my overall impression of Ed Orgeron may be the most stark difference from what I used to say compared to what I used to, what would say now. I think in the past, I was, like a lot of people, completely fooled by the cartoon character-like demeanor that Orgeron projects, and that led me to assume that this is just a rah-rah coach, this is more of a figurehead, this is more of a mascot than a coach. I couldn't have been more wrong. And if you still think that way about Orgeron, that it's all about scarfing down as much gumbo as you can, then I think you've misinterpreted what Orgeron's all about. The numbers that matter here more than anything else, go back and look prior to LSU beating Alabama this past season. It was the final thing that LSU needed to do to prove it was a real program, and it did it. But prior to that, any kind of subset of wins you want to talk about, wins against ranked opponents, performance versus the spread, games on the road, SEC games, all the ways in which you can subdivide a schedule, LSU's schedule had been cut up every way possible, and LSU was performing very well under all those metrics, just hadn't beaten Alabama yet. Well, this past year, they kind of got over the hump there in that regard, and the rest is kind of history. So ranking Ed Orgeron among the top five coaches in college football, it's absolutely a deserving rank, and I think for right now, even though I don't like seeing Kirby below Orgeron, on the basis of what Orgeron did a year ago, you got to move him ahead of Kirby on this list. Of course, early in the show, we talked about Kirby's placement on Ralph Russo's list at number six. All right, a couple other SEC names to get to. Dan Mullen comes in at nine. I've talked a lot about Mullen. I don't have a ton to say about that. Jimbo Fisher is at 10. This is one of those things, and I joke about this. You know, we agree on so much. You're a Georgia fan, probably. I'm a Georgia fan. When it comes to outlook, we just share a common mindset. We similar backgrounds, maybe even. So we agree on a lot. One of the things, though, that my audience and I seem to have constant disagreements about is Jimbo Fisher. I do believe that Fisher's a good coach. I think we'll see that at Texas A&M this year. You know, did I think he'd make a bigger impact last year at the Aggies than he did? That may be fair to say. But ultimately, do I still think this is a top-flight coach? And do I think that A&M got itself a really good one when it hired him? Jimbo's trajectory, I think, probably a little more upward than Florida State's without him, his old employer. So, yeah, from that standpoint, I am a believer at Jimbo Fisher. I think you'll see some evidence of that this year. I think that they're a threat to go 11-1. They're not my pick to win the SEC West. That is still Alabama. But in terms of crowding the top end of the SEC West. I do think it's time for Texas A&M to do that this year. And I think if it doesn't happen this year, then at that point in time, it's fair to start asking some questions. It's fair to start saying, well, what's Jimbo not doing? You can do that after the 2020 season if you want to. But for some of y'all who don't want to believe in him, give him 2020 and let's see what happens after that. Then you got Mike Leach coming in at 11. The way that I feel about Jimbo, I feel almost the exact opposite about Leach. The media loves Leach because he is a cartoon character. He gives funny quotes, talks about pirates and zombies and things along those lines. You know, he is the kind of guy that doesn't take college football seemingly so seriously, and a certain pocket of the world seems to really like that. I don't think that's going to mix well in the SEC. And the only reason why I'm repeating myself on this is I want my opinion to be very clear. I don't think Leach works in the SEC, and I think we'll start to see an example of that coming up this year. Other SEC names to get to. So Gus Malzahn comes in at number 20 on this list. And I think that's interesting because, by the way, this is Ralph Russo from the Associated Press that we're talking about here. There were a couple of other lists recently where Malzahn's name didn't show up. It was a couple of the guys that write for one of the pay sites. They were doing their own top 25 coaches, and at least on one of them, Malzahn wasn't there at all. And I think one of the weird things about the job that I do and this portion of the show is I find myself defending someone a lot that I don't necessarily want to defend. I'm a Georgia fan, therefore I don't like Auburn. Therefore, I don't want good things for Gus Malzahn. But it's amazing to me that there would be any debate about Malzahn being one of the 25 best coaches in college football. Even 20 on this list may be a little bit low. I mean, say this out loud for a moment. This is what Malzahn did last season. He beat Alabama head-to-head in large measure because of a coaching decision late in that game. I mean, that alone shows you that coaching matters. And the fact that a guy like Dan Mullen ranks so high on this list, a guy like Gus Malzahn ranks, I would say, at least in comparison to the guys on the list, relatively low. What evidence do you have that Dan Mullen's a better coach than Gus Malzahn? That Dan Mullen is more equipped to lead? Because right now they're both the power programs. Mullen was at Mississippi State. You could give him credit for doing less with more there, or I guess more with less is the way to say that. You could give him credit for that back then. But now Mullen's at Florida. And yes, you'll say, well, Mullen beat Malzahn head-to-head this past year. That's probably true. It was also the home team in that game, a little bit of an edge there. But is the one head-to-head matchup alone enough to rank Mullen ahead of a guy like Malzahn that has won the SEC, that won the SEC West a couple of years ago? And that's a significant accomplishment. Even in this day and age, that's still a pretty significant accomplishment. It's weird that I'm in a spot to have to defend Malzahn. But in terms of 20 coaches in America, or as one national writer said last week, 25 coaches in America better than Malzahn, I think you're hard-pressed to find an example of that, and it kind of ties back into it. I hope many of you got a chance to hear this yesterday. Our edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, where we talked about if you look at some of those early point spreads, Georgia 4.5-point underdog at Alabama, according to FoxBet, a 2-point favorite in Jacksonville against Florida, but just a 3.5-point favorite at home versus Auburn. Now, that's a lot of stuff to happen between now and that game being played. But it gives you an idea in terms of tough games for Georgia this season. The national media wants to talk to you about Florida. Georgia fans want to have Alabama circled, and there's good reason in probably both those regards. But that Auburn game, led by Malzahn, who most people want to kind of disregard, most people kind of want to push out the door, he is a survivalist somehow, some way. He finds a way to hold on to his job and finds a way to be a thorn in people's side, more so than Alabama, than Georgia lately. But just keep in mind that a lot of experts, people who put their money where their mouth is, still expect a tough game from Auburn when that finally goes down, and we'll make that your SEC through. Yeah, so I can't thank you enough for tolerating what is a slightly different edition of our show. Hopefully you don't notice too many differences. For the most part, podcasts, we can still kind of deliver in the same manner in which we've done that before, but it is a little bit different. We are at home. I do have a makeshift podcast studio set up here. I know for the radio audience, probably a little bit different there as well. We're going to continue to work on making, you know, our guest interviews sound as nice as they can and just try to deliver good content. I think there is still college football stuff out there. We like having the off-season conversation already, so from a certain sense, it's not all that different anyway. We're just not talking about spring practice the way we thought we would be. It was scheduled to begin today, and now it's not. I did think that Georgia had, you know, a really nice a nice interview the other day, or I should say video the other day, where, you know, it kind of looked at its response to the coronavirus, and essentially it almost ended up being kind of an encouragement to folks who are kind of dealing with this right now. That was a really well-done video for Georgia, so good job there on that. You can find more of that at dognation.com. I'll also remind you, our Gatorator Updater, 1,235 days, even in the midst of all the weird times, there is still a constant, Georgia being better than Florida. We'll see you tomorrow at Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.